This episode is brought to you by Fat Expats. It's the new expat magazine that's coming your way next month. If you'd like to find out more about it, head over to twofatexpats.com. You'll see a pop-up and you can sign up and we'll shoot you some information. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you, Kirsty Rice. Although now I sit here in the dark because it's the grey skies are back and we had a cold change yesterday. So it's 14 degrees outside now. How quickly summer has gone. It's gone.
Oh, my gosh. What a difference a week makes. Last week you were in like a shoestring strap dress and it was over 30 degrees and you were full of sunshine and light.
I know.
I'm looking at you now.
I know.
It's all dark.
It's in line with school going back and the dark mood of all the members of our household having to get up to get to school on time. In fact, last Thursday was the first day they had been in school for a full day since March. So that was quite a big deal. In fact, such a big deal that my daughter, teenage daughter, came home and never appeared for dinner and I went to find her and she was asleep.
Hey, Nikki, we usually kick off the show with four fat questions and I am going to absolutely throw a curveball because I've just realised from talking to you that I want to ask you a different fat question. So I'm going to. So
go right ahead.
I hope you're okay. So, and the reason I ask you this is I've just spoken to the lovely Tor in Jakarta who I wanted to speak to her about staying in Jakarta and what it's been like, you know, staying put through the whole COVID and watching friends leave and not come back, et cetera. And I asked her about schooling because she has two children and I said, can you see yourselves going back to school this year? And she said, well, no, she really can't see school going back. And the only reason she could see school going back is if there were people that really, and I mean like in-house school, not virtual school, but, you know, heading back into
attending,
the classroom. Attending. And she said, no. And I think if it does, it will just be pressure. Parents have put the pressure on that they want their children back in the classroom, but she really couldn't see it happening. Now, you do have children that are attending in the classroom. How confident do you feel that they will still be attending in the classroom, let's say, in 3 months' time?
In 3 months' time, not so confident. In 8 weeks, for the first 8 weeks, yes. So our school, even though it's an international school, it has to follow the guidelines of the state education board.
Right.
And the state education board has been very clear in terms of going back to school that they have said the first 8 weeks must continue face-to-face. This is, you know, this is what they've said. So there's no excursions, there's no PE, there's no all these sorts of things, and the focus must be entirely on academic learning for the first 8 weeks. So they are really trying to, from what I read of the press release they put out, get as much learning, face-to-face learning and education in the first 8 weeks because they're not sure what's going to happen after that.
So I take it you mean, though, like if there is a massive, you know, cluster or outbreak or whatever, you know, near your home, I'm taking it they reserve the right to change their minds.
They're absolutely 100%. As we've said since the very beginning in March when people started saying, should I fly here? We've said, you know, no one can give you advice because tomorrow that information is going to change. But what they've done is they've gone back this year with a very different model and they've given the schools much more guidance in terms of what the model should be. So the way we operate now here in schools is each grade has a bubble. So the bubble, and they don't sit, meet, have classrooms swap, see other grades. They have their own entrances and exits from the school and they have their own four or five classrooms in senior school. And in junior school, obviously they go to their own classroom. In the playgrounds, they have delineated areas where their grade can be outside or play. And so if they have a case in the school in one grade, they just deal with that grade. So they take the teachers and the students out for a certain period of time, do the testing, et cetera. Now we've got the rapid testing, that kind of thing. I have asked, well, you know, I've got a child in grade 8 and a child in grade 12, and they come home to the same house at the end of the day. So, and eat in the same kitchen and the same dining room and use the same bathroom. So if there's a grade 8.
And I don't know if you've heard, but coronavirus is quite contagious.
But I, like most other parents, are so glad that my children are back in some kind of routine for them. I mean, I don't, obviously we are, as I've said, a high risk household. I don't want to push it if we have an outbreak or a spike or whatever. I'm happy to have my kids at home. But I think on the whole, the majority of parents, providing that you don't have a super, you know, difficult household, are happy for their kids to be back in the classroom for whatever period they can be. The thing is, so interesting that you just talked about speaking to Tor in Jakarta, because I'm part of the WISH team, which is the Welcome to ISH. And usually for the first couple of weeks, we sit in the lobby of the school just before and after school. And we just have parents come along and just ask us questions like, how do I get a school sweatshirt? Or how do I loan money on the cafeteria card? Or, you know, all sorts of things. Who knows? Where can my son find a hockey club? I don't know. So we just sit there and basically we just chat to people, because that's love to chat. So that's my favorite volunteer job of the year. Anyway, but this year we couldn't do that because there are no parents allowed inside the school. So only children are allowed and staff are allowed inside the school. So how do we create the same environment? So what we did was we set up a series of Zoom calls in the same time frame. So we gave people time to drop their kids to school and then get back to a location, whatever. And then the same before pickup. So we ran it sort of half an hour before people would have to leave to go and pick up their kids. And one of the people that did a drop, so I just sat there and basically parents dropped in and out of a Zoom call and I just chatted, just the same as being in the lobby almost.
Wow. And that's so good.
Yeah. Well, I just thought that it's really important. Like, imagine moving countries, imagine being new to a school during this. Like, it is tough. I mean, we've talked before about how tough it is.
Yeah.
So we did that. And one of the parents I spoke to was a father who is German, but he and his family haven't lived here for 22 years. So his children have never lived in Germany. He brought back his son for grade 11 and his wife and two daughters stayed in Manila for the year. His son, he said, his child was having issues with the online schooling. It was very difficult. It was not an ideal environment. So he wanted him to be in a school environment if possible. They talked about it and the girls were really thriving and enjoying it, his other two children. So they just decided that they would do, and it looked like the schools in Manila weren't going to open so for the year. So he and his son have come to Hamburg for 1 year for his son to do as much face-to-face as possible.
That's tough. That's really tough. Yeah.
So that's just amazing. I mean, that's such a big call.
Yeah, it is.
Especially when you don't know if school's going to be open. Like, I just think it's really, I mean, I was obviously, you know, and he was just dropping in for someone to talk to because, you know, he doesn't know anyone at the school and he's there as a single parent working from home on Manila hours. So he's up at 4 in the morning. Anyway, so it just is an example of what is happening school-wise. And, you know, you don't know anything. You don't know what the next 3 months, the next 6 months are going to be.
No.
But it just looked to them like school was not going to open this school year and that wasn't going to work for everybody. So they decided to do that.
Yeah.
So families are making big decisions right now, really tough decisions.
Yeah.
That they think are in the best interests of their family and doing the best they can.
And, you know, once again, Nikki, that returns to the fact of the difference between having younger children and older children. And, you know, one of the ideas that I keep that is swirling around in the back of my mind that I think about when I'm out walking the dog on the beach is, you know, is this expat gig going to only be in the future for people with young children or no children? do you know, like if a vaccine isn't found and we have to revert back to the days of, well, if you come and accept this assignment, you will come and accept it and you will not move for the next 3 years. You know, you will make a commitment to us that you will be here. We're not going to send you home. We're not going to, you know, evacuate you out for medical care. You know, this is it. This is your gig. But then that does very much make it, you know, like in this gentleman's situation, school is shut, it's only virtual, he wants his, he doesn't think that that's an option for an older child. Whereas when I speak to expats with younger children, it's not such a big deal. Do you know, like if you have someone,
no,
if you have someone I grade agree. One or grade two, you know, just talking to Tor, she said, we haven't enrolled our grade two child back into school because it just virtual school doesn't really work for him in grade two. And, you know, I really feel that, you know, having had four children go through grade one and grade two and even grade three, I probably could have, you know, throwing in some time. Yes, it wouldn't have been as good as a qualified school teacher. I would guarantee you that. And yes, they wouldn't have had as great as an experience. But for a lot of little children, virtual school is not the go.
No, it's so tough. And then it takes a certain learning style for older children to be able to do it. Mm. And so, you know, and there's no guarantee that any schools anywhere will be open by the end of the year. I mean, globally, I mean, but you just have to consider, you know, I mean, it's just such a difficult decision. But when you think about it, when you were younger and you went away not knowing how long you would be gone for, I mean, I don't know about you, but we always said, well, we'll be back before he starts school, because we took him when he was a baby and that 5 years seemed like a long time.
Yes.
And then we'll definitely be back before he starts high school. Oh, yeah. Well, now he's just started his last year of school ever.
Yes.
You know, hopefully. And so, you know, we, because of all the opportunities around in the world and how education and communication and transport has developed, we've been able to do that.
Mm.
But we have to go back, and I'm sure that, you know, there might be younger people, there also might be older people listening to this going, come on, you two, what are you talking about? You know, I took my kids away when there was, you know, we had to call home on the telephone, you know, once yes. a week because we couldn't afford to do it. And, you know, we didn't have international schools. We just did, you know, we just did what we could, whatever. So there were those that went before us that did it much tougher than we have ever done it. And much.
Yeah.
So we have to remember that, but it's, I think it's hard to go backwards once you've been somewhere. So once these opportunities have existed as they are, your question about in the future, will, you know, this expat gig be for people? I mean, my husband's constantly saying, you know, that's the question. Will expats exist in this, in the way they do now in the future? Will companies do this? Because is the risk and the cost too great to companies to do it? I mean, they're the first people. So companies are the first people that moved expats around, and then people themselves became self-initiating people, expats, who went and found a job and moved to another country. But those people will also be considering their options because of, well, for example, places like Australia where you can't get back in.
No.
So this week I was listening to a podcast, and Fee and Jane, fortunately with Fee and Jane, one of my favourites, for the lovely BBC voices. And they had an AMA, which is an Ask Me Anything, and they did a video recorded Ask Me Anything where they had the questions had been pre-submitted. And one of the questions just got me, and I was so just, I was walking along the street saying, yes, yes, and all these people were looking at me, crazy lady like, with my invisible earpods that no one could see. And the question was, what do you think you would be doing now if you're a man? And that was the question that they were asked to consider. And I was thinking, wow, that's it's a really, because they're both two successful women. They're in broadcasting. They have good careers. It's not as if they, you know, gave everything up to be married or to have children, et cetera. But it was just such an interesting question because it really made me consider the same question, which is obviously the point of it. And I just thought, would we even have been living overseas? I mean, we've talked before about women expats and women being the person you know, creating the move. And it, I mean, the statistics on that are really very low. I mean, I just did a quick search when I thought about this in the question. In 2017, 14% is the average percent of women in the expatriate workforce globally. And the numbers are higher in somewhere like the US, lower in Asia Pacific, et cetera. But it's just, I don't know, like, what do you think you would be doing now if you were a man?
Now, I have to ask you, Nikki, because I love Fee and Jane, but I haven't listened to this episode and you were saying that you were like, yes, yes, yes. What did they say? Like, because like you said, they are successful female broadcasters. What did they feel would be any different for them if they were men?
Well, so Jane Garvey is divorced. She's divorced and she said, well, I'm 56 and I'd probably be remarried with small children and be in the park early mornings on the weekends. She said, because, you know, men tend to get remarried and then have second families, which I had a little giggle about, but I thought it is quite anecdotally true. So she likes her morning sleep-ins, and so she's quite glad she's not a man from that point of view. But they did talk about when they had had career breaks for their children and when they went back and took different kinds of jobs that they would take because they were considering their families and having their children, you know, be a priority as opposed to their career being a priority for periods of their life. So they did talk, and one of them runs a BBC show called Women's Hour. And she said, I don't think I'd be the host of Women's Hour if I was a man. So, you know, regardless of career, but I think the impact had, the difference for them had been children, having children. That was, seemed to be the difference that, that they could note, because they started in journalism, they continued in journalism, but the changes they had had in life had been, and in their careers had been around children.
Yeah.
So that was the main thing for them. But then I went back to the, would we be expats? You know, what would I have done? How would that all have worked out? So yeah. I don't know. What do you think?
I wouldn't have been an expat, I don't think, because I, well, oh, so much of this I can't really answer. I mean, I worked in recruitment, right? That was my first career. And I don't know, would have I even wanted to do that if I was a man? Because, I mean, my fascination with working with, in recruitment was I loved to ask people, you know, what they really wanted to do and where they'd really love to work and, you know, what it was that drove them. And, you know, I was
all the questions people fear in interviews.
Yes.
I really want to do this job.
Yes.
This is what I really want to do, this job.
And I did work primarily with a lot of women. And so I did, I worked in a very female orientated industry, but there was always one or two men in the office, and usually one of those people was the general manager or the major account manager. And if I was going to go off on that tangent and say, well, you know, maybe I would have been, but I did eventually become the major account manager. So I guess I would have, you know, done that and wanted to be a manager in that role, but I don't think that was really an expat thing. I would have been very much about the city that I lived in and developing relationships within that city. And I don't think I would have been an expat in that sort of career. But then if I was a man, maybe I would have
had a different career.
Done a completely different career. Yeah. Maybe I would have had a different career. But yes, if I was a man, I probably wouldn't have stopped and had four babies and had to be away from the workforce for a certain amount of time while I was physically giving birth, do you know? But so I guess that would have been very different. I wouldn't have had that interruption. I can't say that I would have had more superannuation, because one of the things we did do as a couple was we continued with my superannuation even when I stopped work. So we did keep putting super in, but I guess I wouldn't have had those company contributions that I would have had. I don't know. It's a really tough question for me to answer, I guess, because I just, I don't know, Nikki, is it unfathomable not being a woman? I'm bloody glad I'm not a man. I'm so glad I'm not a man. I'm very happy to be a woman. I don't know. What about you? What do you think would have happened to
you? That's interesting because I don't know. I sometimes think it'd be easier to be a man. I don't know what would have happened to me because I wasn't doing any type of career that I think would have ever taken me overseas that I can see. Although someone I did work with in the same company ended up working for a client who was Microsoft, Microsoft was one of my clients as well, and they moved overseas with them, but that was a man.
Yes. Do you know, Nikki, I keep thinking of that scene in Fleabag where she finds herself in a bar with a woman who's won the Women's Businesswoman of the Year. It's played, yes. I think the actress is Kristen Scott Thomas, yes. I think. And Kristen Scott Thomas has this great monologue where she talks about the pain within women, that we're born with this pain, and then just the joy of menopause coming where you're free of the pain of, you know, this monthly cycle and blah blah blah. And I think I keep coming back to that when you said, oh, I think it would be easier to be a man, is I look at my husband at the moment being ill with cancer. Oh. And a lot of the things he has that are going wrong with him, I do sit there as a woman and think, oh gee, you really wouldn't have coped having babies. You really wouldn't have been good at this, because a lot of the things you have going on with different regions of your body, they're kind of par for the course, you know, of doing it. And I have found myself thinking, gee, I think we were lucky that I had those babies and that I've had those things. And I have had subsequent issues from having babies that have been a bit of a nightmare as well, that have, you know, I've had to go and sort out. So I think, yeah, that would have been different, just floating through life without any of those issues. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
I don't really know. I just thought it was such a great question that I thought we could have a little discussion about it, because I just thought it's, and then also then highlight, of course, from an expat perspective, that there are the percentage of women expats is much, much lower than there are men. I mean, I know off the top of my head now 3 families in my current sort of atmosphere where the female partner is the lead expat and has.
Yes.
So, but I mean, I've known more over time, I guess, but just right now of, off the top of my head, that's all I can think of. So, yeah, whereas obviously I know many more men-led families.
Yep, same here. I know a lot of women who are working expats, but they perhaps weren't the lead expat. They had to go and find their gig.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's what I mean.
With
someone
else.
Yeah.
And, but yes, I'm the same as you. When I start thinking off the top of my head of women who are the lead and that they've moved, I can only think of a handful, and they've got amazing jobs too. They've been incredible to sort of get the jobs that they've done. But yeah, it still is very, very skewed the other way, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, Nikki, next question. I often in our chats recently, Nikki, when you and I have sort of been having a quick chat about, you know, what life's like here for me at the moment. I usually live in Qatar, but at the moment I'm in Adelaide in Australia. And I've heard in your tone when I've sort of talked about what I'm doing and where I'm going and whatever, you've sort of said to me, oh, you know, that's amazing when you think about only next door, how differently they're living and what they're doing. And, of course, you're referring to the people in Melbourne who are in complete lockdown, which is the state next to the state that I'm in. I'm in South Australia. Capital city is Adelaide. Melbourne is the capital city of Victoria. And in Victoria, they are in a stage 4 lockdown. Nobody can travel within 5 kilometres, outside of 5 kilometres of their home. Everybody, there is nothing going on. Do you know, you are basically staying home while they're trying to reduce the numbers, which they are doing an amazing job as we speak. And I've been really confused by it every time you've said it. I've kind of looked at you thinking, what does she mean? You know, why is she so amazed by it? And it kind of came to me this morning because I thought, you know what it is? It's because, or this is what I think, and I want you, this is my question to you. I think it's because you are outside of Australia and you're in Germany, and so you're looking at Australia as a whole and you see it very much as a whole. And I'm in Australia and I've reverted back to that smallness of, no, I'm in Adelaide and Adelaide is Adelaide and Melbourne is Melbourne and Sydney is Sydney. And to me, you know, Melbourne is a 8-hour drive away from here, but to me, Melbourne might as well be Bali. Do you know, it might as well be.
Well, at the moment, because you can't get to either one.
Yes, because you can't get there. And, you know, I would not think about being there. I have a mother-in-law who's in Brisbane and we don't even talk about going there because it just seems unfathomable, and plus all the stuff that we have happening in our lives. But we have become very segregated. But I think it really got me thinking about that is one of the beautiful things about being an expat is you leave and you see your country as a whole and they become your countrymen. And you think about your country very much as a whole. And then you get back, and I think I've been back here now for over 6 months, and so already I'm not seeing it that way. Do you know, I'm seeing it as that is life in Melbourne, that is life in Sydney, that is life in Adelaide. And my life is dramatically different than what it would be in Melbourne right now.
Yeah, I think that could be it. Yeah, it could be. Like, I am just looking at Australia and I'm seeing all the different things because I know people, as you do, in all the different parts of Australia, but you are living your life.
Yes.
And I can't believe your kids go to school. Like, I just, one of my kids just popped their head in and disrupted the recording that will be edited out by now, by the time you listen to this. But I had to say to them, have you guys got two masks? Because, you know, they have to wear masks on the bus and they have to wear masks into the school, in the classrooms, not. But, and it's just a whole different way of life that we have here. And then I see in Melbourne, they have to wear a mask just to go outside, which I just think is just so tough. Mm. And so I guess I'm looking at it from the point of view of how I'm living versus how they're living versus how you're living. And it just seems to me that it's really, it's still mind-blowing to me, everything that's going on in the world. And the fact that within Australia, one country, that there are two such different situations happening.
Yes.
And I know it's a really big country. I'm familiar. And, you know, it's not like New Zealand's a much smaller country. And I can see how they all sort of go in one way or the other. But I don't know. It could be that I'm looking at it that way. And it could be that you're thinking more like a local.
Yeah.
You know, all those poor
Because, you know, I think about all those, you know, podcasts we follow, Nikki, you know, local sort of podcasts, and you see in their Facebook groups, they'll say, how are you going, Victoria? Are you okay today, Melbourne? We're thinking of you. Do you know, it is very isolated in each different thing. You know, like Tasmania has completely shut down its borders and said, that's it, everybody. Stay away from us until next year, please. We're not open. We're now not open until January, so just stay away. It is fascinating how it has all broken down into states. And I, as a South Australian, you can imagine, Nikki, I am so grateful.
For sure.
Because I am getting to live in. I am getting to live a normal life. And number one, my husband has stayed safe.
Yeah.
Do you know, while he's been having chemo and radio. And my husband has 6 more radio sessions to go. And it really occurred to me this morning, you know, when we started this journey, the biggest fear was what if he gets COVID? Do you know, if one of the kids brings it in, what do we do? And I sit here now and go, wow, we're down to 6 more sessions and he's got through it and COVID hasn't been a factor for us at all. You know, yes, at the beginning, major worry and all locked in and all at home and whatever.
I mean, but it still has impacted you because you weren't able to go and sit with him in the hospital when he's had his chemo sessions and things like that. Like it has impacted you, but it hasn't been a daily nagging worry as in this kid's coming home now from being at school with a thousand other kids.
Yeah, that's a brilliant
point. How do I feel about that?
And isn't that funny how we've, how you adapt? Because, yes, it killed me at the beginning that I couldn't go in with him and, you know, just sit with him while he had chemo or be with him while he had radio. You know, I've driven him to radio and sat out in the car, you know, not been able to go in and sort of provide a bit of banter. But, yes, but I don't have, when the kids all come home on Friday from school, there's not a panic of, you know, has everybody, you know, been really careful this week? Yeah, and all of that.
That's great for you guys. I'm really pleased. As I sit in Europe on poised with numbers going up every day, that's great. Let's see how we all go. Yeah. Okay, Kirstie, something else that I want to talk about. It came up in the group recently and it just really gets on my nerves a little bit. So I just wanted to see what you thought about it. And I think it's part of being an old jaded, so many years expat. So what are your thoughts on expat surveys? Because I think they're just done for clickbait, right? So every site you go on has the, you know, these are the top 10 countries to live in as the expat. These are the worst 10 countries to live in as an expat. And every, and then any company or organization that has like a website in each country will like write an article. Oh, Germany makes top 10 of most unfriendly places for expats. You know, and then you click on the Netherlands one and it says, oh yes, Netherlands makes top 10 of most
nice livable city.
Most and it's so annoying. And it's just so that it's because it's all, I find not all of it. Now, we've recently on this program discussed a survey done in Copenhagen, done in Denmark, that was not based around data. It was based around sort of more, and, you know, those done by at arm's length by big consulting companies or whatever. But I find 95 or 98% of expat surveys are done by companies that are trying to promote themselves, and so they'll do the survey and then they'll put out the results and they just, it's just clickbait. They just want everyone to share it. And it's so driven by who fills it in, because every survey depends on the respondents. And
they're trying to glean your information. That's the other thing. That's my least favorite thing about it, is that it's, you know, when it's a bank and what they actually want is your data so that they can then start marketing their product towards you. So, yes, I remember we did talk about the survey in Copenhagen because I'd got so excited that it actually wasn't by a bank or a company that was trying to sell me something. That it was from a market research.
Correct. So market research, I'm all for that. But the clickbait ones drive me insane, because these me the too. Ones that they try and get your information and then they're just trying to create content. They're basically content creation exercises as well as gathering information in terms of customers or, you know, the expat punter. Anyway, that was just my little
And I'd love to do one, you know, I'd love to do a survey within our group, because I do trust our group to that they have got the knowledge and that they would be honest and whatever. But I'm really holding off on doing a survey within our group until there's something we really, really want to know. I don't want to waste people's time with now I'm going to ask you this survey and now I'm going to ask you this and, oh, quick favor, can you do this? I would love to do a survey with our group, but I think I'll wait until there is stuff that we really could be really, really helpful to the group, and then we'll do it.
Yep.
Okay, Nikki, four fat things. Last week my four fat things were I was going to do four things on social media, and I did them. Like, I actually wrote something and I posted it and I got onto Instagram and I took a couple of photos. I did an Instagram live. Can you hear the excitement in my voice?
Oh, you did an Instagram live? I totally missed that.
Oh, no, sorry, not a live. I did a story, but do you know what I mean? Which kind of feels a bit live. I didn't do an Instagram. Instagram lives scare the scare me.
Yes. Because stories are easy, that's what you take the video and if you don't like it, you just you'll make a mistake, yes. You just trash it.
Absolutely. I look at people that do Instagram lives and marvel over their work. I love, I've talked about it before, the Let Me Try Before You Buy.
Yeah.
Nat, I think her name is. What does she always say? Well, how does she always kick off? Hello, my gorgeous friends. Hello, my gorgeous friends. I hope you're well and I hope you're happy. And off she goes. But I love her stuff. But she does these Instagram lives where she's putting clothes on and off. And I think of all the things that could go wrong. Like for me, if I'd be falling over and getting my knickers in a twist, literally. But yes, so that was what I did. How did you go with your fat things? What were you going to do?
I was also going to post on the socials and finish my bike riding. And I did post on the socials, yes. But I didn't finish my bike riding. I'm just always, there's always a reason. But no, reasons are over. I've got to do it. I'm going to keep putting it here and keep myself accountable in this situation.
Okay, so when I speak to you this time next week, you are going to have ridden your bike to work four times. Is
yes,
that what you're telling
correct.
Me?
Four more.
Are you sure? You've just told me that it's grey and cold and
yeah. Well, that's all the better to.
Okay. All right. Good for you. Good for you. All right. I don't want to dissuade you. I think that's amazing. So well done. I'm going to write four things this week. Nikki, I actually went and found, I know you're rolling your eyes, you don't believe me, but I did, after I did write something last week on the four kids, 20 suitcases, one of the things that happened that I absolutely loved was seeing people that said things like, oh, I really needed to read this today. And that is every reason to write something, right? When someone says, I needed this today, because I totally get it when people say that. I am in that same sort of spot where I am looking to muster every piece of resilience I possibly can to keep going. And so I'm going to keep going. And whether it's even if it's maybe just a little, I call them memes, and my children tell me off because they tell me it's got to have a photo and it's got to be funny if it's a meme, but you know what I mean. Even if it's some sort of little bit of inspiration or something, I will.
One a short piece. Do is a short piece.
A short piece. Thank you. And I did download Scrivener again. And I loaded my chapters for my book in and I rewrote the first chapter yet again. And so I've told myself, you know, just 1,000 words a day is enough to keep going. And I have actually been doing it. So that's what I'm going to keep doing this week and I will report back next week. So that's going to be my thing, is to write four different things this week, whether it's a tiny little thing or a bigger thing. Four times I want to sit down and write. Nikki, what are your three fat things that you've seen done, watched, read, whatever this week?
Okay, so I've had some left over from last time because we had a little recording break. So I have to say that, you know, I'm all about the trashy TV and the just watching something mindlessly. And there are some series, and because we've got no new content, there are some series over time that everybody has always watched and I never have. And
yes,
one of them is Breaking Bad, one of them is Mad Men, and until recently Friday Night Lights. Now, recently the Gilmore Girls has come onto Netflix, and then a couple of years ago they had a revival, as in they made a show 10 years later, they made a four-part miniseries. So I have got into the Gilmore Girls and I cannot believe I've never watched it before.
I loved that woman on Parenthood.
Parenthood.
Were you a Parenthood person?
Yeah, I loved Parenthood. I loved Lauren Graham in Parenthood. I thought she was fantastic. Yeah. And also, but it's so, the Gilmore Girls is full of people that you just like Googling the whole time. Oh my God, I know that person. Where do I know them from? What other shows have they been in? They have all gone on to, I mean, Rory, the daughter, is Emily in The Handmaid's Tale.
Oh.
You know, and I mean, the bad boyfriend is Jack. This Is Us. I mean, there's so many people that have gone on to be in sort of current, like the really annoying friend from high school is Bonnie from How to Get Away with Murder. Melissa McCarthy's in it. I mean, there's all these people that are just constantly going, oh my goodness, have a look, have a look, have a look. But it is so, I really love it. And it's was around the same time as The West Wing, and they also have Walk and Talk.
Yes.
So they have this very quick dialogue, witty dialogue, where they do a walk and talk. And every show nearly starts with a dialogue between the mother and daughter.
Are you watching it with your daughter?
No. But I was watching it the other day and she came in and I said, someone told me we should watch this together because it shows that mothers and daughters can be friends. She said, I think that's ridiculous, and she left. So I'm not watching it with my daughter, but I have put the idea and the seed out there that, yes, this exists and you should watch it. It's on Netflix. You should watch it. So maybe she's watching it in her room and I can't see, and she'll think that maybe we can be friends one day. I don't know. But I'm just...
Oh, you know, you just reminded me the other night I watched When Harry Met Sally, and it was one of those moments where, you know, it's Friday night, you're about to turn off the TV and you flick past and you see, oh, When Harry Met Sally's on. And it was on one of those random cable television channels where in between I had to sit through the ads because it was on
very
in real time. And they had infomercials, and one of my children came out and said, what are you doing? As in, you know, why would you watch live TV? My goodness, things are just. And I said, because it's When Harry Met Sally. This is one of the best movies ever. And they kind of gave me about 30 seconds of, you'd see that, I'm thinking, no, because it instantly it's their first question to anything. When I say you should watch whatever, they will say, is it old? And I'll have to say, yes, it is. But, yeah, it's a classic, When Harry Met Sally. It is such a good movie. I had forgotten how good. A young Billy Crystal.
Does it hold up?
It holds up. It totally holds up. And it's beautiful. And I stayed through to the very end, to the New Year's Eve, and him running through the streets to see her. And you just go, this, and a great cast as well. And, yeah, it holds up. It's good. Because I kept thinking, oh, this isn't going to hold up. It's a movie about dating and marriage, but you forgot about all those beautiful little scenes in between where they had the old couples who explained how they got together and why they were still. Yeah. Oh, holds up! It's brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
But sorry, I the other thing about Gilmore Girls is it's got loads of pop culture references, which a lot of TV doesn't have, because you know they try and hold it up. They think you can watch this anytime in the future, and it was filmed between 2000 and 2007. It talks about Hillary running for president, Rory when she's the editor of the. I have to assume everyone listening has already watched this or will watch it in the future, and I'm not spoiling anything anyway. She's the editor of the newspaper at her college, and she interviews Barack Obama, and then someone says to her, oh, did you ask him if he's going to run for president? And she said, yeah, he gave the stock standard answer, blah, blah, blah. It's just so – and it's got all these sort of like pop culture references, and also as a mother-daughter they watch old movies together and listen to a lot of music. So there's all this sort of movie/music stuff in it. Anyway – Big fan, got to tell you.
Right.
Michelle Obama's podcast.
Oh, gee, so that's getting a lot of press.
You'd have to be under rock by now to not know that Michelle Obama has a podcast on Spotify. It's only on Spotify. So interestingly, if you consider her recent speech at the Democratic National Convention, their production company that the Obamas have is called Higher Ground. And so she does this podcast on Spotify, and I've listened to 3 episodes. I think there's 4 or 5 out. I have listened to the one where she talks with Barack Obama, and I listened to one where she talks with her brother, and I've listened to another one. And it's really a conversation. So it's not an interview situation. It's just a conversation.
Uh-huh.
So there's lots of Michelle in there. So, and she's dropping lots of stuff that wasn't in the book or you know, you don't really know. And I think that's why I'm listening, because I still want to know more about Michelle Obama. She's still compelling to me, even though I was disappointed. She's still compelling to me. And I think that that's the interesting part to me, and that's the hook, so to speak. It's not like Oprah, where Oprah talks a little bit about her own experience but is really getting the stuff out of the other people. She is having a conversation. It's not, she is 50% of the podcast. It's not about her stepping back and letting other people, you know, as so many interview podcasts are, or discuss. Like, I was trying to think of another kind of discussion podcast where you hear as much about the person who's the host as you do about the guests.
Well, see, that's kind of anti-journalism, isn't it? I mean, if you're a true journalist.
Yeah, because she's not a journalist,
yeah,
right?
You don't tell your story. You take the eye away from the conversation. Tell me, Nikki, why is it only on Spotify? What would be the reasoning behind that?
Just Spotify is trying to build their thing. So there's a lot of Spotify only podcasts now. So, or that they go on Spotify first and then they're released later to other platforms. It's just about Spotify being the only place. They want Spotify to be the place you go for podcasts.
So Spotify would have paid her to do it for that reason?
Yes. There would be a thing right on that. Like I don't know the exact details of the deal, but yes. Like Spotify recently bought startup, what are they called again? Gimlet Media. So a lot of Gimlet Media podcasts are now exclusively on Spotify, but some are still streamed to other platforms. So, and at the moment they're all still free, but the thought is that if you have Spotify that you pay for music to get it ad free, then eventually they're going to put the podcast in the same situation. So there'll be this is the Spotify audio side, and there's a Spotify, this is the Spotify spoken side, and there's obviously a music side. So it's all part of their longer term strategy, I imagine. Right. That's how it works.
Got it. Okay. So Gilmore Girls, Michelle Obama, what else?
And just quickly then, one funny thing, and I'm not encouraging drinking in any way, shape or form, but if you are isolated and you can't be with your friends, there is an app called the Beer Buddy app, and you can sign up, and they encourage you to sign up with a weird and wacky drinking name, and you can see when your friends have a drink, they post it and post a little photo, so you can have a virtual drink with your friends. So if you're it's just a really silly thing. It's an idea somebody had, and it's just funny. And someone sent it to me yesterday, and I thought it was funny, so I load it up. I'm Moet Moffat. I'm on there as Moet Moffat. Anyway, last little one. What about you, Kirsty? What do you think? What are your three favorite things?
Okay, so I've been thinking about doing a course, some sort of course, just sort of to, you know, kind of keep the learning thing going. And also because, do you know, when you're away from your home country, you quite often see all these things and you think, oh, gee, I'd do that if I lived in Australia. You know, I'd take part in that. And, of course, now I'm here and I'm not doing any of the things that I thought I would. A, COVID. B, cancer. C, stop making excuses and just go and do something, Kirsty. Yes. So one of the things I want to do is something called the WESET course. And I discovered that this is actually a global course. It's like a wine appreciation course. And you sort of learn a little bit about grape growing and sort of the locations of grape growing and winemaking and sort of what the wines are of the world and the sparkling wines and fortified wines, and sort of it sort of teaches you sort of how to explain a wine style and a wine quality. And so I have put my hand up to do that next month. I'm always really interested in wine. And as you know, Nikki, I live in an area where there's, I think now,
yeah, I was going to say, this is trying to keep up with the neighbours, right? So you can have a conversation.
I will never, ever be able to keep up with my neighbours. There are, for those unaware, I live in an area that's in the sort of Clarenvale wine area. So from where I'm sitting right now, there's about 80 wineries sort of within a 30-minute radius of me. And so just on my street, I think there are three winemakers. And just around the corner is my friend who's a winemaker, a wine marketer. So, yes, everyone is always going to know more about wine than me. But what I would like to do is sort of be able to adequately express how I feel about wine. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, when you're sitting somewhere and you're tasting something and someone says something about it and you think, oh, that's exactly it. Do you know, that's exactly the word I'm looking for, but I never would have thought about using that word for wine. So yeah, that is the aim, just to go and do something that is a bit of fun, making the most of being here. It's definitely something I could not do in Doha for love or no money. Like there's no way I'd be able to find access to be able to do that in Doha. So that's my thing, Nikki, that I will report back. But I just wondered, I know we have a lot of people in our group and people that are listening to the podcast that are finding themselves a little bit stuck at the moment. So maybe that's an idea that someone else hasn't thought about, is taking part in some sort of course or making the most about where you might be stuck right now. My other thing, and you're going to hate this, Nikki, is live football. I am so, so pleased to have live football in my life. So how it's working in South Australia at the moment is, you know, usually we have a stadium that has 50,000 people in it who go to the football every second week, because usually you have a home game and then an away game with the way things work. And at the moment, we are getting football every second week, but they're not filling the stadiums for obvious reasons, but they are letting, it was 25,000 people, now we're down to 10, but they're letting 10,000 people in. And there is just something so lovely about going to the stadium, you know, pulling up at a large venue, wandering in with a group of people and sitting and partaking in something, you know, in a large way with a crowd where, you know, maybe it's not the roar you used to, but there is still a roar. And I do think there's been a lot of conversation about how, because they can get to go, that it's their responsibility to cheer twice as loud, you know, for those who can't. And so there's been a lot of conversation about how 10,000 people is somehow sounding like 20,000 people, because people were just so pleased to do something normal. And I think, you know, when people are saying about, oh, those poor people in Melbourne, Melbourne is the home of Australian rules football. That's a big thing for a South Australian to say, but it is true, like that they are the home. So yeah, it just, when I went with my son on the weekend, so I got to go and see my son play his football, which for a lot of people is bizarre because there's no kids sport in other places. And then we drove to the stadium and watched it. And I did think, oh, we are so, so lucky at the moment to be able to do that. So yes, it has been fun. And yes, we've had a few tears, but also you're sitting there going constantly, you know, is this going to be taken away at any moment? Because you know that the minute we have, you know, a community transferable case, that they will shut it down. So it's such a strange way to live, isn't it, Nikki, the way we are right now?
It is a strange way to live. And I was just thinking there, and I know we've already had the discussion, but I just quickly want to ask you, do you feel lucky? Like, I know you feel lucky, but do you think that South Australians in general feel lucky? Like, do your neighbours feel lucky?
Yeah.
Do you think they appreciate, because I know you have friends all over the world who are in all different stages of lockdown, and plus Victoria, which has one of the biggest lockdowns in the world right now. But do you think people appreciate the freedom that they have right now?
Totally. It is a constant conversation. Because everybody has a relative, a friend, you know, or knows someone that's in a different state, do you know? And it's, so it is a constant conversation of how lucky we are, because I think we all we all just expected that we wouldn't have those things, you know, when COVID first came and everything shut down and we all went inside our homes. And so we all, I think, got used to the idea of, well, you know, because football did stop and school stopped and everything stopped. And so we all thought, well, this is it, you know, until something happens, this is it. And so to be, I think we're all still quite shocked that that second wave hasn't hit us yet. It's like you're teetering on, like, constantly going if, when, how, maybe. Do you know? Because we know that, you said, Nikki, before, everything changes in a heartbeat. So you are constantly thinking, well, this has to stop any minute. You know, we are so lucky because we've seen what's happened elsewhere. We watch the numbers go up and down and sway, do you know? So, yes, I do. I've given you a very long-winded answer, but
I just wonder because as you said, you get so used to living in the environment you're in, so you think all this is just normal. But I just wonder whether you sort of look around and, yeah, I don't know. It's strange times in the world. Kirsty, what's your last favourite
thing? All right, my very last favourite thing is I started reading a book called The Resilience Project. And so he's Hugh Van, and I think it is, and please forgive me if I've got this wrong, but I think it's Hugh Van Cylenburg. It's spelt Cuylenburg. So, you know, when it's that whole thing, you buy a red car and then suddenly every car you see is red. This is my situation with the Resilience Project and Hugh Van Cylenburg, in that I saw someone talking about the Resilience Project, kind of thought, oh, yeah, interesting, jog on. And then since then, this man has popped up in my world in all different forms. And then I was driving home to see my parents last week, and there was his book at the roadhouse, like the petrol stop on the way. And I thought, I need to buy this book because this man just keeps popping up in my world and there must be a reason behind it. He's written a book called The Resilience Project. I'm sort of halfway through it. I'm absolutely loving it, but it's all about finding happiness through gratitude, empathy, and mindfulness. And he just sort of teaches you strategies to, you know, be grateful and mindful and empathetic to others while sort of keeping your head in check. So I've also downloaded the app. But it did get me thinking, Nikki, I read something today and I thought, oh, I needed to read that, and maybe some other people needed to read it, but it's the fantastic Brené Brown, who I think is, you know, the queen of mindfulness and resilience.
Oh, I just have to say, I listened to someone on the podcast the other day explain who Brené Brown was.
Oh, really?
And I said, it was the lovely Eliza on LDC, and she was explaining to her mother, Brené Brown is a person who a certain group of women turn to, yes. In terms of, and it was just, and I just thought it was so weird because I wouldn't ever imagine not knowing who Brené Brown was. Not that I'm a big follower or anything, but I just, her TED talks, and just like, she's in my world constantly. Yes. And I'm just wondering, is that because that's our
generation,
age group?
No, like, it's
where
not.
We are.
No, Nikki, I would say no. And I would say to Eliza, that no, I think Brené, and I find this fascinating, I think Brené has crossed the line from she's now in the world of sport, and a lot of sports men in particular, I want to say footballers.
Oh, so this has come up on your podcast and your radio shows.
Yeah, they quote Brené Brown all the time, because I've been quite amazed by that. Because I would agree with Eliza in that, yes, because when I first heard of Brené Brown was Oprah. Do you know, like, what would have that been, Nikki? 15 years? No, maybe not. 10 years ago, I want to say. But that was when I first heard about her, and she was talking about, back then she used to talk about, oh, what was it? Because it wasn't resilience back then. It was all about
shame.
Yes, yes. So she was the queen of talking about shame and feeling inadequate and finding your courage. And she talked about that. And she has somehow sort of moved it into, because I guess that's what resilience is. I was listening to the sports podcast where Ben Crowe was talking about Ash Barty, but then he was quoting Brené Brown, and I thought, oh, isn't that interesting that now this sportsman is? But then I have noticed since then, whether it's NRL footballers or American footballers or tennis players or whatever, they're all quoting Brené Brown. And my particular, it was actually a footballer today who I saw post a Brené Brown quote. Now, the reason he shared it, due to gambling in sport, there is there seems to have been a lot of comments where people are trying to slide into the DMs of sports people to abuse them for either not kicking a goal or not getting enough possessions because it is costing people money. So they'll send a DM to a sports person saying,
oh,
awful, terrible, horrible language that you cannot even imagine, Nikki, until sports people have now started to share and show you screenshots of what's being sent to them. And it's terrible things saying, you know, hey, whatever, you know, you cost me $50 on Saturday, you useless piece of just disgusting, awful, despicable, revolting comments that you think, why would anyone do that? Anyway, I saw someone had posted today a Brené Brown quote, and it said, there's a lot of cheap seats in the arena that are filled with people who never venture onto the floor. They just hurl mean-spirited criticisms and put downs from a safe distance. And the problem is, when we stop caring what people think and stop feeling hurt by cruelty, we lose our ability to connect. But when we're defined by what people think, we lose the courage to be vulnerable. Therefore, we need to be selective about the feedback we let into our lives. For me, if you're not in the arena getting your ass kicked, I'm not interested in your feedback. So the footballer that shared that, I think that was his comment to other footballers, you know, don't listen to it. If they're not there, they're not you, they're not experiencing it. But I also thought it was a good comment for expats at the moment, because a lot of people might tell you that, well, it was your choice, you left, or, you know, well, you should have done this, or you had your chance to come home, or, well, you should have done this. Oh, and I would say to our fellow expats, they're not out there getting their ass kicked and you shouldn't be interested in their feedback, so just forget them. So that was one of what, you know, we can all take our own personal takes on that. That was my personal take on it as well.
That's awesome. What a segue, what a circle, what a way to close it up. Good job, Kirsty Rice.
As the crowd goes wild.
If only we had a crowd. So anyway, good chat. Lovely to talk to you, and I'll speak to you again next week.
Okay. Speak to you later. Bye.
Bye-bye.